Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, using 529 plans and federal loans to pay for college. The free application for federal student aid known as FAFSA opened on October 1st for the 2019-2020 academic years. Experts on FAFSA say the earlier the application, the better. We'll talk about why. It's a valuable source of money. Even if your family has saved a chunk of cash through a 529 college savings plan, and we're going to talk more about that as well. With the cost of college, the more you have going in, the less you'll owe coming out. So a conversation today about how to save for and how to access college money. And as our guests join us, I'd guess that you have a lot of questions about this. What do you need to know about 529 plans? What's keeping you up at night about the FAFSA application? 800-242-2828 with a lot of practical advice today. 651-227-6000. I'm willing to hear from you even if you haven't even begun to save for college and you've got kids who are headed off to college in a few years. It's never too late to start, but it's good to get as much of a head start as you can. So we'll be here with lots of advice and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Our guest today, Darla Kashian, is a senior vice president and financial advisor at RBC Wealth Management. She knows a lot about 529s. She's in the studio. Darla, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
John Wasik is with us, author of The Debt-Free Degree, How to Eliminate College Debt at Every Step. And he's with us from Grays Lake, Illinois. And John, welcome. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
John, you know a lot about FAFSA, so I want to start with you on the application process opened on October 1st. For people who are intimidated by the details and the scale of the form and the information that they want to know, just give us a little bit of calming advice on going into the process. What would you say?
Well, we're in the midst of working on our fifth FAFSA. You have to file it every year your child is in college, my youngest daughter is going into college, so we got to do it again. The good news is that, in theory, it should work better than it did last year. They had a tool called the data retrieval tool, which was down due to some technical glitches with the IRS. So it's kind of neat because you don't have to have your entire tax form in front of you. In theory, it should download all the data directly from the IRS. I haven't tried it yet, so I can't vouch that it works. It should.
Okay, but so just to zero in here. So you're telling me technologically, maybe it's a little easier this year. But I want you to speak to me overall about, you know, families see this as kind of a mountain to climb. All this information together, going through it year to year. What would you say to that?
Well, you need to boil it down. I mean, what colleges are looking for, they don't care about your retirement funds because you can't tap those for college. And they don't, you know, most colleges, they don't care how much equity you have in your home. That's not really accessible. What they do want to know is, you know, how much disposable income you have to pay for college. So if you're getting bonuses, if you have a high salary, you know, things like that, they want to know. And then every college has a different threshold for granting aid. So the best thing you need to know is that even if you think you don't qualify, the college aid process can be a black box, and you should do it.
Okay.
It's just a matter of getting the numbers into the FAFSA, and the FAFSA is sort of the Rosetta Stone for all colleges. So just, you know, it's like just get through it, and it's not that bad. I mean, once you get through it once, you can do it again.
Okay. We'll have some other more specific questions about that, but let me go to a call here about 529 plans to Connie in Mora, Minnesota. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Carrie.
What's your question about 529s?
Not so much a question, more of a comment.
Okay.
My son is real young. He's 5 yet. Mm-hmm. But we have been, you know, trying to plan for college for some time. My husband was fortunate to make it through college with his parents helping him out, so he didn't end up with any student loans afterwards. I, however, will have student loans for a number of years, probably into my son's college years. So right now we have a 529 plan that we're actually just asking, you know, grandparents and aunts and uncles, like, if they want to, for some reason, spend money on our son, you know, gifting him in a way, that's a really good place to put it. So we've been leaning pretty heavily on that and just trying to get my student loans wrapped up. So it's very hard to look to my son's future when I'm still trying to pay for mine.
This sounds like a really great idea. Darla, don't give the kid tons of toys. Split up your disposable spending on our kid and put some into the 529. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea, and so I'll disclose my bias right now, which is, and Connie, you can take this to your husband, who is quite fortunate. Priorities for parents, your own financial security, retirement, and then college in that order. So this is a really effective way when you're worrying about those top two priorities to get other people involved in college. And that's something that we've done with my own kids as well. So I really encourage people to consider that.
I think you ought to explain why you prioritize that, because the tendency for many families is to flip that, right?
Right. And it's a hard conversation to have because you don't want to be the parent who says, I decided to have kids, yet their education is not important. But I'll remind you that you can borrow money for college and you can take your time to finish school. You can't borrow money for retirement, and that's a time, hopefully time delineated. So think about a kid, you know, Connie's son who's 5 years old. He's going off to college in 13 years, and he's probably going to live until he's 100 or 120 based on today's actuarial tables. So if it takes a little longer, if it, you know, we have this, you know, past tense of, it should take 4 years, and you know, so maybe it takes a little longer, and he borrows a little money. But people can't do that for their own retirement. So,
Connie, you still there? Do we lose you, Connie? Or are you still there?
No, I'm still here.
So, I was curious about, you're smart to be paying off your own student loans. What do you think when you hear Darla saying, "As focused as we are on college, we better start thinking about how we're going to pay for our own lives"? You know, once we're moving into retirement, that makes sense to you?
Sure. Oh, it makes complete sense. And we're contributing pretty heavily to a 401k and a Roth IRA as well to help us along with that. But honestly, as a parent, it's hard to try to prioritize yourself over your children and their future. So it's a difficult sort of thing to piece out.
Exactly why Darla was saying this feels a little counterintuitive, but it's the smart way to manage your money. John, you want to weigh in on that?
Oh, sure. And I always tell people, look, instead of giving kids, you know, birthday, Christmas, Hanukkah presents, things like that, make contributions to their 529 plan. Grandparents are usually willing to do this. Make it a family affair. And, you know, instead of all these things accumulating that they may not ever play with or will lose interest in, you're funding college education. I set up 529s for my daughters when they were babies, and I tell everybody I know, I was like, hey, they're a really good idea. And another tip is to make it automatic. Some of them allow for you to make automatic contributions. So as you're, paying off your student loans or, you know, contributing your 401k, all important things, make at least some contribution to a 529 plan. And then you have the power of compound interest behind you working over a, you know, period of 18 years or so.
Stephanie says on Twitter, college is expensive, and I wanted to add some context to this. If you don't know where the average college tuition is at the moment, private college tuition and fees, $35,676 a year. Boy, does that add up fast. Average cost of state schools, if you're out of state, $21,629. So this is, who knows what it's going to be like when Connie's son is ready to go to college, darling.
At least $1 million a year. So it's interesting.
She's kidding, people.
I'm kidding. So think about it in this context, and I think this is why it's difficult sometimes, particularly with grandparents who tell you the fantastic story of how they worked their way through college, summers as a garbage man. My own brother did that. So if you go back 30, 35 years, you could actually make enough money to pay tuition at a state college through the summer.
Wow.
But if you think about minimum wage not having kept up with, let alone inflation, the inflationary rate of college, this is really impossible now. So you can't say to your son or daughter, you know, just make the money in the summer, work part-time during the school year, and you should be able to graduate debt-free. At a four-year college, that really is impossible.
Richard says on Twitter, my son joined the Army to explore his career interest for the GI Bill. His college is and should be paid for. That's one path. To Laura in Minnetonka. Hi, Laura. What have you learned from this?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to weigh in. My son graduated from Hopkins High School 6 years ago, and they had a really great program to help people fill out the FAFSA. It was one evening, a couple of hours, which was helpful.
That is good.
So there's that. The 529 plan is great. I did that as well. The nice thing about the 529 is it's the person who opens the account who owns it. So I have one child. So let's just say you didn't do post high school.
Uh-huh.
I could have given that money to a niece or a nephew or, you know, whomever, which is nice. One thing I probably especially want to add, though, is that the FAFSA, the 529, can also pay for things like Hennepin Tech. That's where my son went. He has been working as a mechanic now for 5 years, making over $60,000, and it's growing every single year.
Excellent.
And he paid $20,000 for his schooling.
Wow.
So a lot of people try to push everybody into 4 years, but, you know, the four-year college, but we need our electricians, our mechanics, plumbers, and so forth. It's a great way to have an economical education and make amazing money and have a real good steady career.
Laura, really glad you called with that. Thank you. You know, John, interested in whether FAFSA only makes you eligible for federal money, whether you're doing what Laura just described, going to a technical school or four-year school or whatever, or does it also allow you to access state money?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the earlier you do it, the better off, because there are plenty of state grants out there that are first come, first serve. Depends on your state, depends on where you're at. So it really makes sense to get it in there soon. And I'd also like to say something about alternatives. Community colleges are still a great deal. Many offer honors colleges, and this is true in the four-year schools, where if you get in, often you're given huge tuition breaks. Some community colleges offer, they won't charge you tuition if you get into an honors college. There are military academies, which are still the best bargains in the country. Not only do you get a degree, and you can get a liberal arts degree from a military academy now, you get a job, and plus, you know, higher lifetime earnings having come out of those great schools. And there's also, you know, a lot of misinformation about the retail prices of schools. Sure, they're really scary numbers, but you have to look at how much aid they're awarding.
Mm.
Some schools are more generous than others. Some no-name liberal arts schools have huge endowments that you should know about before you apply. And there's ways of vetting this stuff on the internet where you can see what the net cost of attendance is. So look at that first, and don't always go for the big names or you know, assume that a school won't give you any money, because that's not true.
I this is a really good thing to emphasize, John. Darla, whenever we do these shows, we have a guest who says, don't become dazzled by the names that everybody recognizes. Understand that you can get a fantastic education at a lot of schools that, you know, they may not be known outside of the state, but you're getting a good degree.
I think that's really important. And here in Minnesota, we also have the advantage of the PSOE program. Right. When you're in high school, if you're, I believe it's 11th and 12th grade, you can take courses for college credit.
Oh, right.
And so that's another way of accelerating the speed at which you can complete your degree.
PSEO, I am
PSEO?
Being told.
PSEO, yes.
Yep, got it.
Yes. So I think that that's a, here's the other thing that I think is, again, another difficult conversation to have with your kids. Think about what the horizon looks like. So when I have a degree in English, from Marquette University. And so
you really an English lit major?
Yeah.
So am I.
British literature.
Ah.
Minor in theology.
Wow. And you ended up in the financial services field.
It's a trajectory that makes a ton of sense if you know me. Okay. So something to think about is, you know, if you're borrowing money, and I did, my perspective, and this is how I ended up in finance, that when I started when I was 20, and I knew I was going to borrow about $20,000 to graduate, that was my cap, because I knew that when I graduated, I couldn't reasonably expect to make more money than that based on the skills and the background that I had. So I was very reluctant to take on any more debt than what I thought I could earn my first year.
That's really smart.
And I think I think that's something to have a conversation with our kids about.
How does that conversation sound? You're going to be a teacher.
Right.
We can figure out what you're probably going to make. So let's go
cap it off at $30,000-$35,000 maximum. But more importantly, then let's back up that conversation and say, let's look at the marriage and not the wedding. So if the career path is education, what do you need to do in order to make that happen? So do you actually need a 4-year degree from a elite private college, or, you know, would you be well advised to look at Mankato State or some of the more economical and exceptional educational institutions that we have here in Minnesota? So those are the kinds of conversations. If you want to be a poet, find out what the barista at Starbucks is making, because that's going to give you some ballpark of what might be prudent in terms of the amount of money that you're going to borrow.
Are you? Go ahead.
Oh, and I was going to say, and the less you borrow, the more freedom you have, right? So
you can move anywhere, take the kind of jobs you want, because you don't have this big, huge cloud of debt hanging over you.
And it's not about being bossy with your kids, but it's really about saying, you know, what does that long term look like for you, and how can we not burden you, you know, with an extravagant amount of debt?
And then you can spend your evenings talking about how great the Brontes are.
Exactly.
Because, you know, you're not obsessing about how much you owe. And that's great, too. 651-227-6000 for your questions about the FAFSA applications, 529s, investing and saving for college, 800-242-2828, wherever you are in our 5-state region. And then on Twitter, at Carrie NPR, to the phones to Katie in Mendota Heights. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Carrie. I have a couple things to say.
Okay.
I wanted to reiterate that actually PSEO in Minnesota is in 10th grade for career and technical colleges.
Okay, good.
And career and technical things. I also wanted to reiterate that Minnesota is a state that has a state grant that is need-based to answer some of the questions. I actually work for a higher education institution.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in government relations, so I'm very passionate about this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the 529 in Minnesota actually recently became, I don't want to misuse word deduction or credit, but anyone who can chew a child's 529 can get some sort of tax benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I encourage everyone, my parents, my family, we asked for a book and a contribution, because my kids are 4. I have a 4-year-old and 2-3-year-olds.
Excellent.
And I would just encourage all of you to do that. And I also want to just reiterate that higher education does pay off. It's just how you do it.
Yeah. We're not here to say don't do college because it's expensive. You're just saying do it wisely.
No. And Carrie, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying be very specific, as your guest just last said, as I was listening. Find out what your kid wants to do and mm-hmm. help them find the right path, and it will pay off dividends. And my dad has a PhD. I have a master's. I have 3 sisters. One has a master's. 2 of them have bachelor's. And my mom has a bachelor's degree. We've done really well with him. Mm-hmm. My husband has a high school degree and is a pilot and makes over 6 figures a year. So you can make
Which he reminds you all of on Thanksgiving dinner, right?
Katie, thank you. He reminds me every day.
Got it. Katie, thank you. It's good insight on this. Claire asks on Twitter, John, my husband and I were just talking about our daughter's 529 plan. Thanks for the timely show. Any suggestions if we should pool all college savings to her 529, or should we mix it with other saving options?
Well, the 529 is great because it allows you to do a tax-advantaged savings plan, and most 529 plans are offered by every state. You don't have to invest in your state's plan, but they have this automatic option, so it's set to your child's age. So early on, they're more in stocks, and then when they get closer to 18, they make it a lot less market risky. So they do that automatic allocation for you, and it's really a good deal. Just keep in mind you have a flexibility with any 529 plan. If your kid doesn't go to school, you could use it for graduate school yourself. You could use it for another child. You could, change the beneficiary. They're usually really flexible, and most states allow you the option to do it. It's just important to keep in mind that, the earlier you save and the more often you're able to save, the more you're going to accumulate.
Yeah, John, I think her question was 529s and more, can you put the most of what you're saving into a 529? What do you think?
I would, because you have that option of protecting it from taxes.
Okay.
And anything you pull out of it is not taxed if it's used for
education,
college, tuition, room and board, and computers.
Okay.
So it's really the best vehicle for that. Other options, you're going to get taxed on the income, or you can't put it in retirement funds. It doesn't
Got
make
it.
Any sense.
Darla, you seemed a little more skeptical of everything going into the 529. Why?
A couple of reasons. One is the flexibility that you have of non-retirement or non-educational money separate from what's in the 529, I think, gives families a lot more choices. So I'm always reluctant. I'm in a most people don't have the advantage of, quote, overfunding their 529s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect of it. The other thing is that the 529 is 100% available for tuition versus your separate personal wealth, which is treated a little bit differently once you're applying for aid. So, so I think it's good. I typically, with families that have the option to get there, my goal is to get at least halfway to what we think school is going to cost.
Through the 529.
Through the 529.
Okay,
and then the balance of it allocated differently.
Okay. Darla, cash in with us if you've just tuned in to hear this discussion about how to pay for college through 529s and FAFSA applications. She's a senior vice president and financial advisor at RBC Wealth Management. And John Wasick with us, the author of The Debt-Free Degree, How to Eliminate College Debt at Every Step, to Mike in Hugo. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for waiting.
Hello, everybody. I have a question. Well, actually, I have two questions.
Okay.
One is how the 529 affects financial aid. And if I have three kids and they all have individual 529s, I know I can move money between them. But should I be putting all the money in my youngest one's 529 so the oldest gets more financial aid?
And okay. Hang on. Hold the second question there, Mike. Darla, what do you think?
Boy, I think John might be better equipped to answer this.
Tax kind of stuff? Okay,
yeah.
John?
Gosh, it doesn't really matter because the aid formula is really based not so much on how much you have in a 529. They do consider it, but it's more on your disposable income. So, you could put it in one fund or another. And there's another consideration. If you have more than one child in college at once, you're going to qualify for more aid than just one child. So that's a difficult question, and I would defer to Darla on how to, best allocate.
Oh,
that.
Mike, I'm sorry. It's like ping-pong between John and Darla here with no answer.
So, Carrie, I think one thing is to think about is, depending on the age of the kids, the Department of Education and some other tools will give you, Saving for College, is it .org or .com, will give you some tools to go online and say, here's kind of our financial situation, what, you know, model it out for what it might look like. Okay. And so I would encourage
Mike
to do that.
Yeah. And Mike, I don't know. Do you want to ask your second question?
Yeah, I do. So besides, I should have had my kids closer together than 4 years apart. for when I have the money for the 529, is it all expected to be used the first year, or do they average it out over 4 years? So am I going to have to spend it all the first year and then try to get more financial aid for the next 1 or 3 years, depending what college it goes to, or how does that work?
Darla?
Well, I think a lot of it, again, is going to depend on what the need equation looks like. But here's the other piece that I would encourage parents to do, and John, I bet you can concur with this. As you're going through that process and meeting with financial aid officers from the colleges that your kids are interested in going to, ask that question. You know, does this create greater need if we spend it all at once versus... So, but you have the option as a parent to decide how you want to dispense that money.
John,
it just has to be for a qualified expense.
You want to get in on that?
Yes, and here's there's a lot of moving parts. So every year they require you to file a FAFSA, get an update on your income and assets that are available for college. So, you know, you don't have to pay it out entirely in 1 year, and then it may change. So if you have another child coming into school, you know, or if, you know, your income drops, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. You have to pay for an elderly parent. So they're constantly reevaluating this. And you also have to keep in mind, there's a lot of things that are not connected to need. So let's say you want to get merit aid. Merit aid is not, you know, based on any financial formula. It's like, say they're a good student, they play the bassoon, they want a bassoon player in the orchestra. I mean, there's lots of scholarships available where you don't even have to consider that. But every year you have to review your situation and say, hey, you know, I was laid off and this is happening, or, you know, it's a year-to-year thing.
On Twitter, Lisa says, financial aid offices need to be more familiar with the various life situations. I got into a prestigious Minnesota private university, but because they didn't understand that farming assets aren't liquid, you can't sell the combine to make the money, my financial aid package was paltry. And then April asks, do you have to be accepted to the institution before applying for FAFSA? If it's first come for state aid, a lot of acceptances aren't received until later. Do you have to already be accepted, John?
No. Okay. No, you should just apply through the FAFSA. FAFSA is just this document that goes out to any college you select, and it's not in any way connected to a college.
Okay. I want you to hear this, Darla. Aaron says, our financial advisor has us taking out a whole life insurance policy for our kids in addition to a 529 plan. We can use the money if she was ever uninsurable, but we can also use it to pay for education to diversify the funds. What do you think of that as a whole life insurance as a vehicle for saving for college?
Well,
you can be candid. That's why I threw the question at you.
So part of this, I think, might go back to my minor in theology, which is I have a hard time writing life insurance on kids. It's morbid and depressing. But think about what you're accomplishing with whole life insurance. You're buying two products in one, and it's sold as a life insurance product with an investment component to it. You got to figure out if that's appropriate for folks, but it's a lot less expensive in most cases. Maybe this is a unique situation to just fund the 529, which is...
Wait a minute. Did you say the whole life insurance is less expensive?
No. The 529
is
going to be a lot more economical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Than going through the fees on the life insurance.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, and here's the other thing is that... you know, when your minor child is then an adult, they own that policy. So you've also now put potentially in the hands of a young adult something that has cash value, which at five, they seem delightful. At 15, often a lot less delightful. And then delightful again, potentially at around 25. So I would be reluctant to put any potential money in the hands of a young adult that they could control.
Your calls, Carrie, go ahead, John.
And I've talked to parents all over who said, "Oh yeah, my advisor said I should do whole life insurance." Well, just keep in mind that the advisor is likely making a huge commission on that.
Exactly.
And there's huge fees embedded in those contracts, and they're not designed for college funding. My best suggestion is like, hey, keep the money in your pocket, put as many dollars as you can into that college fund, and go with a direct sold 529 plan. So this is a 529 you get into. You don't have to go through a broker advisor to get it, and even more, your money's being invested at usually a low cost.
Aaron, I really hope you're still listening to the show, because that's advice I think you should hear. Okay, to the phones. Lisa, thanks so much for waiting.
Thank you. I wanted to go back to the FAFSA for a minute.
Sure.
You can get estimates of your financial aid online before you actually file the FAFSA. So, for example, if you have money in the bank, theoretically that's going to lower your financial aid. You can look at the effect of paying down your credit card debt. That takes money out of your bank. It pays off your debt. It might make you eligible for more financial aid.
Okay.
Paying down your mortgage, putting money into retirement, all of those things help take care of the parents and might make the children eligible for more financial aid. And you can get those estimates before you even submit that FAFSA filing. So it's a nice tool to be able to use.
That's really good advice. John, Lisa's saying really dig into your financial profile, game it out. Before you're making this application. Make sense to you?
Well, I would recommend that everybody apply for the FAFSA and put your data in there. And schools are kind of funny because a lot of them have a real black box when it comes to this formula. I mean, some private schools will consider, you know, equity in a business or home equity, and most don't, but, you know, it's unless you're going to work with a financial planner who's an expert, who's a college financial planning specialist, that who knows how to move assets to really work the aid formulas, you know, just go with the FAFSA and, you know, do the best you can to save. And to know that, you know, every college is kind of different, you know, and you're going to get deals if you cast a wide net and you don't, and you're not really focused on one type of school. For example, my daughter applied to the University of Minnesota, got in, got a little bit of aid, and somebody from her same high school got pretty much in-state tuition. And, you know, it's just it depends on the student, depends on the college. Some colleges will offer you in-state tuition. If you're out of state, private schools will have, you know, better deals than public schools. I mean, mm-hmm. Everything's on its head these days. But the important thing to know is you can go to just about any college, and there's a aid calculator that's kind of a rough estimate of what you would qualify for. It really gets down to, like, you have to have the FAFSA data in there to actually know, and then you have some room to negotiate if you get accepted.
Mary called from Atwater to say, I teach at a college. Take your first 2 years at a two-year college. Transfer to any four-year school. The cost is substantially less, and it will help you get through a four-year degree. I have to say, I'm glad I didn't do that, but that might be right for a number of kids. John says, I'm doing some savings to 401k and retirement. I would like to save some for my children, and I don't have a 529 plan. I consider my RAF IRA as something I contribute a lot to and maybe too much. Am I risking a trap if I'm too dependent on the IRA to pull money for college? What would you say to that, Darla?
You know, it's a tough one because I think we really want to have a balance. And so I think if we go back to those priorities, you know, if you're personal financial security is in place and you're doing what you think you might need for retirement, then is there money left after that? And that's, I think, what you want to look at. Here's the other thing that I think we sometimes forget in this period of time when, you know, if you think about that 15 to 20 year period of time when you're saving for retirement,
mm-hmm.
and your kids are young and you're really working hard to achieve those goals. Also keep in mind that, you know, what will your career trajectory look like when your kid's 18 to 22? Is there more potential for cash flowing some of those expenses down the road if there isn't the opportunity when they're younger to be able to save?
Give me a specific example.
Well, so I always think about this. My kids are 8 and 11, and, you know, they went to childcare, and at the peak, childcare costs us about $25,000 a year.
Wow.
So think about that. Now, much like the one caller who didn't, you know, wasn't good at spacing the kids, maybe I didn't as well. They'll only be in college for 1 year overlap, hopefully. But think about, you know, so, and then we always have this dream. Oh, once childcare is done, we're going to have so much more money. Well, school's not free, blah, blah, blah. But it's not 20, you know, we're not spending $25,000 on before and after care.
So calculate that into.
Think about that long term. So you might be able to save some portion of that once your kids start school, but you also knew that you could do it when you were younger and potentially earned less. And maybe you'll be able to do it again when they're 18 to 22.
John, Ellie asks on Twitter, what about kids with divorced parents? Do both parents' financial information need to be included in the FAFSA?
Well, for the purposes of the FAFSA, they focus on the parent who is providing, whose child is a dependent of that parent. So they don't look at both parents, but they do consider money coming into that household. So it gets a little bit complicated.
Okay. To the phones to Jill in Stillwater, Minnesota. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Hey.
I was wondering if the experts could say something about, I have four children, and they actually, on the FAFSA, they combine all the 529s. So the earlier caller was wondering, should I just put it all in one? Or
yeah,
they combine it all. So it can, if you have multiple children, and you know you're saving since they're babies, it adds up pretty quickly. Where it does cap out at a certain amount. So is it better to put it in the Roth IRA to to save money and pull that for their education? But we've already started all these 529s, and you know. We're stuck, but other people might be.
Yeah, let's see what John and Darla have to say. John, what would you answer to that?
Well, the first thing to know is how many children are going to be in college at once. So colleges are usually pretty generous if you have more than one tuition bill going on. The other thing to know is that I did set up a Roth IRA thinking that it would be a backup, just based on my age. When my daughters were going to be in school, and so far I haven't had to use it, but at age 59 and a half, you've had your money in there at least 5 years, and I have, you can pull it out tax-free for any reason. So that is a good backup idea, depending on your age. So, but not, you know, don't be discouraged from investing in a 529 because there's so many other factors involved.
So on the Roth IRA idea, I think it's a good one, but keep in mind that there's income caps on what you can contribute.
Right, yes.
And also be mindful of the fact that the mind does interesting things when we're thinking about money. And so you're thinking about it in this IRA bucket. At the same time, you're thinking about it in a college bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And are you counting that bucket twice then?
Meaning what?
Are you intentionally looking at that money specifically for college, or is it some...
You mean in the IRA?
Correct,
yeah.
In the Roth IRA.
Okay.
So I like the idea of separating the intentional savings into 529 or Roth, but not mixing them up quite so much.
One of the things that we wanted to mention, Darla, was that Congress went along with this last-minute amendment by Texas Senator Ted Cruz, and it allows 529 money to be used for private or religious K-12 education. Does that, you said you think that's a bad idea. Why?
Well, I mean, I have some other reasons for what the intention of doing that was. So it's up to $10,000 that you can use. And if you live in a state that preferentially incents you to contribute from a tax policy standpoint to donate or to contribute to a 529, you can kind of get a way around a tax break for private education, which I think, you know, may or may not have been the intention. But I also think we run this risk of not having that long game in mind. So I think if you're pursuing private education, you should be able to afford it. It should be separate from what that college education looks like. And those should be two distinct financial goals. But for people who have the resources and who qualify, it is a way of circumventing the tax deductibility of private education.
But John, that's really the concern, isn't it? It's the short term, you know, paying for sixth grade versus the putting money in year to year for college in the long view.
Well, you know, I do echo what Darla's saying. I have some really strong political and policy concerns there. But the biggest risk is that if you're using this vehicle to fund elementary education and high school, then you run the risk of undersaving for college,
yeah.
And that's the big ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could be in any community. Hopefully your public schools are okay, but if you're taking that money and you're putting it into this other bucket, if you will, you run the risk of not having enough for college, and that would be my biggest concern.
To the phones, to Diana in Minneapolis. Hi, Diana.
Hi. My wife and I are in our 40s, and we have two small children,
uh-huh.
7 and 4.
Uh-huh.
And we also have two sets of parents who are all in retirement now.
I missed that last part, Diana. Two separate...
Oh, I'm sorry. We have two sets of parents who are in retirement.
Okay.
And I have to say that I'm far less daunted by saving for my children's education than I am thinking about taking care of one set of those parents that don't have enough in retirement.
Got it.
So we are very diligent about making sure that our retirement is in place before we've moved to college saving for our kids. My question is, you know, we met with a financial planner, and I haven't really been convinced about the benefits of the 529 yet. It seems to me like if I put our money there, then that will be considered cash available for college, whereas we were advised to buy a permanent life insurance plan, not on our children, but on one of us, and then we could use that money in the unlikely and unfortunate event if one of us died right away, or we could pull that money down the road for college if we needed to.
Okay.
Or pull it for retirement. Like
Diane, we're a little short on time, so I think we've got the essence of this. John, please weigh in on this, again, with the life insurance and skepticism about 529.
Well, again, it's the same problem we had earlier. I mean, if an agent or a broker or advisor wants to put you in an insurance plan, they're going to make a huge commission. Those dollars are not going into your college fund. So that would be my first concern. The second one is, 529s are still probably the best vehicles to do college savings because generally they have low-cost mutual funds in them. Most of them are index funds. You can save even more. And if you don't go through a broker, I mean, just about all your money's going into college instead of a broker's pocket. So I would just kind of default to what I said before.
So I would encourage listeners to do this calculation when present. I'm not a fan of these products. I'll make that clear. But look at what a term life insurance policy would cost. Life insurance is designed to protect your family, and it's designed to replace income. So look at the cost of a term life insurance policy. Look at the cost of the permanent policy. Look at what would happen if you invested the difference. The cost is going to be significant, from hundreds of dollars a year if you're a young person to potentially thousands of dollars a year. And what would that difference look like over the period of math that you're solving for?
One last question here. What if you have one child and you've been saving money in a 529 and that child decides not to go on for any education beyond high school? What happens to the money?
Well, generally, since you're the owner of that vehicle, you can use it for anything you want.
Okay.
And if you pull it out for non-college purposes, you're, of course, taxed on it, but it's still your money, so
okay.
You control it.
So it isn't like if it doesn't go for education, it sits there or whatever. You can still
Yeah, I mean, you can use it. You'll just pay taxes on the proceeds.
Okay. Hey, I thank you both. Lots of information here and so many calls we didn't get to, so we need to talk about college more often. Darla, thank you. Good
thank
to have you,
you
here.
It was
John,
a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good for all the
pleasure.
Advice.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.